Inkstud, CITR 101.9 FM. I was just rocking out to Prime. That is the best song ever. I am joined by Mr. K. Thor Jensen. Do I have you there, Thor? Thor? I think I've lost Thor. Thor? Okay. I'll be back in a sec.
Seven years ago, I read my first Dean Koontz novel. It was Voice of the Night. I was alone in our house on Harrison Road in Norway, Maine. My father and I were moving to Main Street in Gorham. He was spending the night with Joy. And the only bed left in the house was in my sister's room, though she stopped sleeping under this roof a while ago. I didn't have my radio, which I needed if I was going to sleep. And even the cats, Petty Paws and Bran, were at the new apartment. I was alone in our house on Harrison Road in Norway, Maine, very bored and scared of the night. On the floor, my eyes caught upon the book I read that night. It was my first Dean Koontz novel. I was barely still 12 and I read it that night. Riveted. Even when the lamp shorted out, I got a flashlight like some dumb scene in a bad movie. And now I'm barely still 19, but I've just finished my 16th Dean Koontz novel. But every book of his I read, I get sadder. All the good guys are pure and talented and beautiful, a beauty of spirit and goodness, and all of them have found in the course of their novel they find the love of their life, a full, giving, wonderful love. And sure, all of his characters have horribly dark parts in their lives, but now it's okay, they have their love. What are you supposed to do when you're in those dark times and the rain is falling down on you? You're only left to wonder if you're just a bad person who doesn't deserve it. Dean Koontz novels.
Hello, Lucille. Are you a lesbian? Do you like to go to bed with women? I'm gonna call Lucille right now. Answer calls. When I try to kiss her, she says she got a cold. When I wanna make love, she got female trouble. That other thing that women have every month. She always wear pants, long pants. I never seen her in a dress, a skirt. When we go out, they like two men out together. She wears her hair cut short, like mine. She don't have any tits, she don't wear makeup with high heels. And they laugh and whisper it out. Why do he take her out? She like women just like he do. When I notice, stares at. I just take young women clothes off with her eyes. Let's see. That number is 268-0777. Girl with a lesbian for 2 months? Damn. I don't know if she's a man or woman. She must be a... Hello, Lucille. Are you a lesbian? Do you like to go to bed with women? You are? You do? You what? You got a date with my sister. Why you lesbian? You damn freak. You. She hung up on me. I hate all lesbians. I hate all lesbians. I want a woman, all woman, and from now on, when I take a woman out, first time, I'm gonna find out if she a woman, and we men know how that's done. I don't want to see or hear a lesbian, cause my sister is a lesbian.
Inkstud, CITR 101.9 FM. Let's try this again. Are you there, Thor? Thor is not there. That's odd. Do I have you, Thor? Nope. Okay. Well, this is CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Inkstud Show, the show where we talk about comics. I'm going to play another song and come right back. We're having technical difficulties. Tease.
Play.
Okay, we're back. Let's hope this works now. CITR 101.9 FM. Do we have you, Thor? Thor? No Thor. Our board is not being very nice to us. I was supposed to have K-Thor Jensen on the phone, and I do have him on the phone, but I'm not able to hear him. So I'm going to play another song and try again. Don't go away, Thor. We're going to get you. CITR once again. We're trying this one more time. Thor, have we got you? Have we got you, Thor? Nope. Okay. Things aren't good at CITR. Do we have you, Thor? Thor? Nope. We're trying all these different things and nothing's working. Thor did this great book called Red Eye, Black Eye, which is all about his trips across America. Currently, Luke has run down the hall to figure out what the hell is going on. His trip across America, everything in his life went to poop, and he bought a bus pass to take the Greyhound. I don't know how long the trip was, but he went all around the States and saw many exciting things, many stories of him and his friends. And it's a great book, so I hope I can bring him on and talk about it. And I think I'm going to play another track soon, or we're going to try one more thing. What are we doing, Bryce? Is this going to work for us? Thor? Thor?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, we
I'm
got here. You. Yes! Yes!
You can hear me?
I can hear you. Damn you, whoever was screwing around with the board. Thank you, boys of CITR. I tell you, man, this never happens.
Yeah, I'm sure it doesn't with your Canadian tin cans and string radio. Well, I'm happy to be with you.
Am I talking to K. Thor Jensen or am I talking to Evan Dorkin?
You're talking to Keith or Jensen, okay. Although I was a grotesque M. Dorkin fetishist as a child.
Ooh, that's not pretty.
It was a rough time for me and for everybody involved.
Bind yourself with stinky sweat socks or something?
That was actually a different sort of fetishism. That was as a result of horrible gym classes.
Horrible.
Yes, Red Eye Black Eye. I wrote a book.
So, it's great. I read it. I loved it. 300-page epic. It's like an indie Ulysses, but it's not because I can read it.
Right. And it also doesn't have a lot of elegies about soap, and it's not about drunken Irish people.
And there's enough comics about them.
But yes, that's true. Drunken Irish monopoly.
There's that Garth Davis stuff. Yada, yada, yada. So let's talk about how you originally started the book. Once again, I want to apologize for the technical difficulties we've had. I don't know. Someone was monkeying with the board. This happened. I think there's some kind of like devil against me or something.
It's fine. You got to hear "Hello, Lucille." Are You a Lesbian? Which is an excellent song.
That was. I quite enjoyed that. Your picks and songs. Actually, I want to. After we talk about your book for a bit, I want to talk about your picks and songs. Because that Prime song, that just rocked.
That is. It's a crushingly good song. It has intense lyrics. It's a very realistic portrait of somebody who's going to get him some justice.
Definitely. And Prime.
Well, yeah, let's talk about the book.
Let's talk about the book.
How it's 300 pages long, 300 pages, 10,000 miles in 60 days. It takes place over the course of 2 months in late 2001 after my entire life collapsed like a house of cards on top of me, except it hurt much more than a house of cards collapsing would hurt.
Now, let's give some people some context of the time, too, because this was in 2001. Or 2002 was this, the beginning of
2001. The very end of 2001, where I don't know if you guys heard up there in Canada, but something happened here in New York then. It was a thing. I don't know.
Some buildings
got blown up.
Yeah. Now, you did this bus trip the same time that there was also those bus freakouts then. That was right after 9/11.
Yeah, there was like bus hijackings, and my family was like, "Why are you taking the bus? Do something safe." I was like, "How? What is safe now? You know, I guess hitchhiking maybe is cool again."
Yeah, you know, there's gonna be lots of nice trucker boys waiting for you on the
road. Or I'll just hop in a train car and make some hobo stew.
Hobo. I'm hungry just thinking about that.
Yeah. So there's definitely a little period of panic amongst my acquaintances. But yeah, no bus I was on was hijacked. We all got where we were going safely, if not cleanly.
Now, so this story, everything was going bad for you. What was it about the bus trip that really appealed to you?
Well, basically, I just needed to get out of the city. I needed to get out fast because I didn't have anything there holding me, and it was the only thing I could really afford after getting laid off from my cushy internet job and, burning through my savings trying to keep up that dot-com lifestyle. I didn't really have anything left. I maybe had like $600 to my name. So at that point, it was either, take the Greyhound or walk. And I wasn't walking cross-country. I'm not a inspirational, devotional message type person. So I did it the cheap and crappy way instead.
And took the classy Greyhounds.
Yes, the classy, bad-smelling Greyhound. Actually, my wife and I are working on our release party for the book Thursday, February 5th, and we're trying to make the bar at that smell as much like a Greyhound as possible.
That's not enticing to me.
Well, it should be enticing, because we're trying to immerse people in the experience, because you can read about it, but you can't really live it.
And I guess with CBGB's closed, you can't get that smell in New York anymore.
That's true. Well, I guess bars smell like bus terminals.
There we go.
Yeah, we're shipping in some derelict.
From New Jersey. Now, this book, as much as it's a story of your journey through America, the land of freedom,
right?
It's also a journey. It's a story of other people. Now, when you were starting on the journey, were you intending to do it about? Did you have in mind what you wanted to do with the book, or were you just like, I just need to forget everything and...
Not a clue. The book, we're doing a book, was the last thing on my mind when I left. I was motivated by this pure, terror flight response. Like, I have to get out of my life for a little while. And then as I was traveling and I was talking to people, I was like, a lot of it was discovering sort of what makes people's lives where they're living in America valuable and interesting to them. Like, what what they're living for, because I lost everything I was living for. So a lot of it is kind of discovering that in other people. And then once I thought about doing it as a book, it made a lot of sense to incorporate these little stories, these little sort of bits of with other protagonists, just to make it a more interesting reading experience, to kind of mix it up a little bit and keep it from being too self-absorbed. Because I'm very self-absorbed, crushingly so.
I did get the chance to meet you at SPX, and you crushed me with your ego.
I actually forgot entirely about you, and after this call, I'll forget your name, probably, because I'm just so interested in myself and myself alone.
There we go. I'll remember that next time I'm out east, if I'm ever out east again. There we go. I'll hunt you down and hurt you.
Now, I will have no idea why you're doing it.
So, were there any stories particular that really stuck out to you, that really blew your mind going through this journey?
I really love Sally's story about going to work at the Barnes & Noble, and her coworker gets an RU486 abortion and carries the dead fetus around in a little like jar pendant around her neck. Like, that to me is so quintessentially American and perfect. It's like, oh yes, I'm having a convenience abortion, but I'm still so attached to this, you know, 3-month-old clot of tissue or whatever, that I'm going to keep it with me forever as decoration.
I gotta say, you know, it's not often I get creeped out by things. In fact, I have a pretty high tolerance for grossness, and that really stuck out to me. That was like, wow, that's nasty.
That's a gross damn story. I tell you what, I was pretty turfed out when I heard it. Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, I think that they all kind of pull you in different directions. So, yeah, but that's a good one. That's a good, like, midway point of the book, so.
Now, what were some of your influences starting writing it? Like, I'm going to pull out the obvious one. Like, how about Jack Kerouac? Like, what was he never a literary influence for you?
Well, yeah, I love that kind of, the Kerouac brought a real, like, free, associative, like, travel dialogue, basically, where you're not going with this grand purpose or grand goal, but you're just kind of taking things in as you go. I love that. I love Travels with Charlie by Neil Steinbeck. It's a really good, like, sort of, see where the road takes you travel book. I mean, it's hard to write an individual travel book because it's very much a personal experience, and it's very difficult to communicate all of the aspects of that experience. I mean, I really wish I could have made the book Scratch and Sniff. That would have been excellent. That would have really kind of brought it into that.
For when you get that
dimension.
Hobo smell? For when you get the hobo smell?
Right, that hobo smell, you know, the assorted synesthetic elements. But, you know, I did my best with ink and paper.
Now, what were some things you found about yourself while going through this experience?
That I really don't like eating nothing but Subway 6-inch veggie sandwiches? I don't know. I think of it definitely was kind of a rebuilding process for me. Like, I had sort of constructed this life for myself in New York, and then having had that taken away from me, they're like, well, how do I start over? What is sort of the core of myself as a person that I should be building from? Because I kind of lost sight of a lot of that. I mean, if there was a prologue to Red Eye Black Eye, like the 10 pages before the first page would basically just show me getting really fat. Because that's all I did in like the 2-3 years before that book was published. I lived in New York and I got fat on the internet. That's what I did. And so, you know, the suffering burned a little fat off me.
Suffering, no eating, and smelling.
Smelling, yes.
Smelling.
Smelling is a great exercise.
Now, did you originally, when you started working on this, like, when did you start working after you'd gone through the journey?
I started thinking about it as a book maybe 3 or 4 months after I got back. I was still homeless at that time. I was living on my best friend's couch. And I started thinking of, like, what I could do. I hadn't really done very much in comics for the years before that, like, probably from, like, 98 through 2001, I had published maybe 30 or 40 pages of comics, which is not a lot for me. So it was very much like, how can I get back into this? I need a big project. And then it made a lot of sense just going back through my notes and through my sketchbook drawings from the trip. I was like, you know, I could probably make something pretty good out of this. You know, this actually holds together as a story with narrative through lines. It's interesting and funny and strange enough that I think other people would enjoy reading it. not just me. And it turned out that way, which is good. So, yeah, and then I spent, like, 3.5 years drawing it. Yeah, it's about right, 3.5 years.
Well, it is, like we said, it's a lengthy book that isn't a quick thing to turn around, but you started doing it online, if I read correctly, doing my wee bit of research for the show, for Serializer.net?
Yeah, I was one of the first cartoonists on Serializer.net, and I did 3 pages a week, which really helped me, like, have the impetus to carry it through. Because it's very difficult to set a 300-page goal for yourself. It's much more realistic, at least for me, to set a 3-page-a-week goal, which is how I did it. And then Serializer shut down, and I totally lost motivation, and it took me, like, a year and a half to do the last 80 pages.
Now, since the process took you a while to work on it, did you find having to, like, keep yourself in a certain art style, or were you kind of changing art styles along the way and not wanting to, or was it
stifling to have to draw the same way on page 300 that I did on page 1. It was very difficult for myself because I learned a lot about the way I draw. I learned a lot about my storytelling procedures. I really, in these years, I think I've developed a lot as an artist, but I couldn't really show that in the book because it would mean going back and making the whole thing consistent. And if you get trapped in that sort of endless loop, you're going to be really depressed and not productive.
And then and then you would be Bob Fingerman making Big the Question.
Right. Which turned out well for him, though.
It's
gorgeous. Worked out and it made for a better book. But in this case, it was just like, and the style is definitely a very sort of simple, not cartoony, but it's a very expressive style that's not very realistic. And I think that's best. It's better for the book in that way. Because it makes it more sort of approachable. Like, my next project is intensely realistic and very researched and kind of a pain. But it's definitely, like, I need the change. And then also, when I was working on Red Eye Black Eye, I was doing a lot of anthology work for books like House of 12, You Ain't No Dancer, a bunch of other books like that. And that kind of gave me the outlet I needed to work in other styles and to stretch in other directions without compromising the big project.
Kind of keep yourself creatively enthused.
Right. Because, I mean, there was definitely burnout working on the book. It's a huge thing. It was a long commitment, and I would be, you know, lying if I said that I didn't kind of get tired of it at times.
Now, at the beginning, did you think this is going to be 300 pages, or was it like, maybe about 120, you know, or...
I thought it was going to clock in at about 220 when I first started putting it together. And then it just grew and grew and grew. And, I mean, I probably could have done another 100 pages. There's stuff I could have told that I could have, you know, included that would have made it that much longer. And I just had to take a step and be like, okay, this can go. This that vital, this can go. And it was difficult. It was really hard.
What are some things that you would have liked to have included in the story that you didn't have a chance to?
Oh, there's whole cities that got left out. You know, I made a stop in Duluth. I stopped another place in Oregon, Portland. There's a lot of places that, you know, and people that were just, you know, I'm sorry, I can't memorialize everything. You know, just like little things, little atmospheric things I would have liked to do more of. You know, like the bits in Texas could be longer because Texas is gigantic and crazy and there's always stuff there. I mean, it's tough because once you start thinking in this direction, you're like, oh, there's tons of stuff I could have done differently. You know, I'll leave it for the director's cut.
Multi-volume series.
Right.
Now, it's coming out from Alternative Books. When is it coming out? Alternative Comics, I guess. Comics or books?
Alternative Comics, and it hits stores on Wednesday. It will be in stores next Wednesday.
New Comic Wednesday. You hear that, everyone? Go to RX Comics. Go to whatever comic stores in Vancouver, and also internationally, any good comic store. If they don't carry it,
they don't carry it, then feel free to badger them and tell them that they don't know what they're doing and can, like, roll up their shirt and give them, like, kind of belly rubbins until they start giggling, and then they might order it.
Or belly slaps.
Or belly slaps. I don't know. You got to watch the flaps. Those things are dangerous.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is. It will be in stores on Wednesday. I'm very excited. The orders were great, so most stores should have it. You know, people seem to support it. And I hope it'll do well.
How was the process shopping it around? Was Alternative, like, someone you had dealt with him before? Is it Jeff Mason, right?
Yeah, I've worked with Jeff Mason before on the 9/11 emergency relief book, and actually a part of Red Eye the Black Eye that's left out is in Florida. I was staying at his house. But I, you know, out of respect for him, I left out the parts in the book where he's walking around the house in his underpants, you know, throwing the cats around. So I approached a couple publishers with it. I got some nice rejection letters, some nice, you know, some great comments on the book, you know, pretty much echoing things I already knew about it. Jeff decided to take a risk on it. I told him that I would be working my ass off to promote it, which I have been. And I think it's paying off for him. It's doing well. Publishers Weekly says it's one of the first important graphic novels of 2007, stuff like that. So it's getting good, you know, getting good feedback, which is good.
That's good. You're running the media ragged.
Yes, and the media is likewise running me ragged.
We'll badger you down. I'm going to take a quick song break.
All right.
And I'm not going to lose you when we come back, because I'm just going to turn down your volume and then bring you right back up.
Excellent.
No pressing buttons. Inks at CITR 101.9 FM. We are talking to Kathor Jensen. Did I pronounce it right?
Yep.
Okay. And we will be talking more about Red Eye, Black Eye and what he's got going on in the future. This is, I'm going to play, since I played almost every other song, I think I'm playing the your Lonely Synthesizer music now.
All right, then.
Let's hope people don't get lonely. CITR 101.9 FM. CITR 101.9 FM, this is the Inkstead Show, the show where we talk about comics. I'm joined by Mr. K. Thor. Do I have you there, Thor?
I'm here.
Awesome. Awesome possum. Now, actually, that song, I don't know why, but the countdown said it was still playing, so I was setting up something, and I'm actually going to play it right now, and then I want to ask you about it. You're probably going to get mad at me for playing this.
And the most outrageous thing that you've done.
Oh, Jesus. My whole life has been, like, finding different ways to make money, different ways to kind of get through. Like, when I was in Seattle, I did a lot of, like, weird, like, obviously digging ditches, selling blood. I did two videos.
Wait, what? Videos?
When I was in Seattle, when I was 19 years old, 20 years old, I did two amateur gay pornography videos.
No, nothing.
Okay, that was enough. Enough blind date. How was the blind date experience?
It was a terrifying experience. I actually couldn't hear it from the fence. I don't know which part you played.
I played the gay porn part.
Oh, yeah, that's a pretty terrible part. That part makes people pretty unhappy.
Why?
I don't know. The thing is, I didn't tell anybody about it beforehand. So, like, my wife, for example, first learned about it from watching the show. So that was a bit of a rough spot in our relationship.
Aw, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, what was I supposed to tell her at the altar? Not so good.
No.
Blind date was an intense experience. They set me up with a crazy broad with one boob, and they got me completely liquored up. I was so wasted I could barely walk, and actually fell down on my way home and, like, tore my pants wide open. They really love to get you drunk on that show. They pump you full of liquor. And the thing that people who watch that show don't understand is that outside the cameras, there's three producers yelling at you all the time, telling you what you can and cannot talk about. Like, you can't talk about movies or music or anything that might date the episode, because it's important that Blind Date be a timeless work of art.
I'd say it could be timeless, except for the horrible fashions that people wear will obviously date it pretty quickly.
That's true. I'm wearing way too tight clothes. It's kind of a problem. But, you know, I had nothing to lose.
Now, Thor Will Score was the motto of the show, of that show. And I heard somewhere that you actually wore that T-shirt to your wedding.
I did not wear the T-shirt when I was getting married, but I do have a Thor Will Score shirt. I wore it the day before the wedding, I believe. The wife actually made it for me.
Mm-hmm. And you were going out with her at the time when you filmed Blind Date. You just kind of did
it
as a...
No. I was going out with her when it was filmed. I was going out with her when it was aired.
Okay.
We were dating. We had a huge party. We had, like, 80 people in Roger Lodge masks. It was a big shindig. It was quite the thing. And then it was on at, like... And then immediately after it aired, her phone started ringing like crazy with her friends calling her, asking her, "Are you okay?"
Well, we're going to blame Ed Brisson for that false information. Ed, if you're listening, you lied. And Ed, who did the You Ain't No Dancer anthology, of which you have... You're in the second one, not the first one. Right?
I'm in both of them,
you're
actually.
In both? Okay.
I have two good stories, one in each. I'm very proud of both of them, actually.
I didn't read the first one thorough enough earlier today, then. I was like, I didn't see your name right away, so I was like... Which I should have, because the whole thing's in alphabetical order.
Right.
In the first one. But I read your story in the second one, and that was... oh, God, why can't I remember the name of it? It's Of Course, Of Course, Of Course.
Yeah.
And how autobio was that one?
Completely.
Completely?
I mean, that whole story, I'm trying to get away from doing more autobiographical work, because most of my younger days, that's basically all I did. But that was just a story that I drew that in about a day and a half while at my lake house.
Your lake house.
With my wife. And it was very much just thinking about that kind of feeling that you have as a kid, which is, what if I was different in a way that's better than this? You know, what if I wasn't the bad kind of different anymore? And so, obviously, you know, in my case, the natural response was, what if I had superpowers? And then, of course, convincing myself that I did, but they were ridiculous.
And then her hand was warm after hitting you.
Right. That might not be true. I mean, I might have made that up for effect.
We'll leave that.
Since I killed that girl, you'll never know.
You've heard it here first. K. Thor Jensen, comic artist, musician, killer. Now, Music for Girls, I played the song earlier. I think that was Analog I played.
Yeah.
And I've actually played Music for Girls quite a lot on this show, because I like to play music by cartoonists. And let's face it, the only music by cartoonists I think I have is some stuff by Abby Denson and Music for Girls and Action Suits. And we've all
Don't
heard the action.
Robert Crumb's bluegrass music.
Oh, yeah. Robert Crumb gets enough publicity.
But that's for old people.
Yeah. You know what? I ain't old. You know, I just can't understand. What's the deal with comic people in bluegrass and blues?
Well, because comic people believe that everything that was old is better and everything that was new is terrible. So they hate synthesizers and pornography, and they love banjos and antique pornography.
All right. I'm going to get back to your cartooning, less sidetracking conversations. What are some of your influences on doing? Is it mainly autobio stuff, or like...
It really depends. Like, right now, I'm really getting back into this guy, Warren Craighead, who is just amazing and totally underappreciated, and who I hated like 10 years ago. I thought he was just a terrible cartoonist. And he's really kind of recaptured me. A lot of more, like, that's the thing, is the stuff I like isn't really the stuff that demonstrates itself in my work. Like, I really like a lot of people who do a lot of formal play, like Kevin Huizenga or Chris Ware or whatever, but I'm not interested in doing that myself. You know what I mean? I'm fascinated by it, and I guess a part of me wishes I could do it, but it's not something that I find myself doing. I don't know. My comics influences are pretty minimal. I would rather take influences from other more serious genres. I don't know.
More serious.
For me, it's just about trying to do the best work I can do, and if it looks like somebody else or reminds somebody of somebody else, then that's cool. You know, like, I do a lot of my layouts are just straight Kirby ripoffs. I learned a lot about, like, putting a page together from Jack Kirby. I love John Porcellino's pacing and the way he, like, assembles scenes visually. I think he's incredibly underrated at that.
He has a new collection coming out soon.
Yeah, I know. I'm very psyched. If I had any money in the world, I would purchase it. But instead, I will have to shoplift it.
There we go. I know a store in New York. I'd be happy if you shoplifted it from there for me.
Which store?
It's in Greenwich Village. The owner's a dick.
In Greenwich Village?
Pretty sure it was in the Village. I went there for 3 days in October, and I went to the store, and the owner was a dick.
And there are some dicks in this town.
I went to Jim Henley's. Those guys were super nice. It was great. Chatted with them. And I went to the one that you have to go upstairs and buzz to get in. I bought a couple of things there. They had some bad meats for a buck each that made me happy.
Deal.
Some old Jim Blanchard stuff.
A great talent.
Yes, he is a great, great talent. I wish he did more comic work. And then this one I went to, I had some flyers for the Inkstuds radio show, CITR 101.9 FM. And the guy wouldn't take the flyers. They were free. Said, hey, do you have somewhere for flyers to go? Why should I?
He didn't want to clutter up his pristine Green Lantern display or something?
He wanted me to sell it to him. Like, it's got comics in it, and it's about a radio show about comics. People listen to it. They go,
hey. Your customers might be interested. You should just stuff them down his greasy, fat face.
No, actually, we, between me and my friend, we're probably about to spend $40-$50, and we just kind of dropped the comics where we were and walked out. And it's like, you know what? Fuck you. Oops.
See, that's the thing. Your skinny guys can fight, too.
Yeah.
You gotta knuckle up. Man up.
Well, I could have taken him down. I could have taken him down, but...
Since you're Canadian, you would have had diplomatic immunity, so you have nothing to lose.
Yeah, sure. You know, the last thing I want to do is spend my New York vacation being stuck in jail with a far larger man.
All right, well, as it stands, I'm going to make a public challenge to the proprietor of this comic book shop that if he wants to come to my release party on Thursday, February 1st at 8th Bar at 7 p.m., I will fight him for the honor of the Inkstuds radio show.
And I thank you for that, my friend.
That's a gift for you.
Which store do you recommend? Do you go to the Rocket Ship?
Jim Hanley's University.
Jim Hanley's?
Greatest store in town. Rocket Ship is an excellent store. Hanley's is just overwhelmingly superior, however.
I was able to find Cynthia Petal by Dave Cooper there.
Yep.
Now,
definitely a good place for hunting down the rarities.
Now, the thing is about a comic, I'm totally like going way off topic, but a comic like that you can't find in Canada because it's Eros, and the guy's from Ottawa, so it's like... very frustrating for me.
He can't get his own work, yep. His own country.
But I digress.
It's a beautiful book, though.
It is. It's a beautiful book. Check out anything by Dave Cooper. Now, your next book you're saying you're working on is taking a lot of research and a lot more preparedness. What is it?
Well, I'm working on proposals for two books right now, and when both proposals are done, I will hand them to my new agent, who is also a Canadian, a guy from Toronto, very excited to be repping by a Canadian, and then he will take these two proposals, and whichever one he sells first is the book that I will do next.
Nice.
So, which is good. It gives me a little freedom. And I'm excited about both of them. One of them is a sort of a piece of historical semi-fiction. I mean, it's ludicrously researched, but it's something that nobody can know the facts on. So it's rough in that way about the 1976 assassination attempt on Bob Marley in Jamaica, which is just a fascinating and crazy story. Which has like all these bizarre supernatural elements and crime and the FBI and Jamaican politics, which basically to vote in Jamaica you just go shoot a guy at the other party. So it's this intense, incredible story that I'm completely fascinated by. I have like a reference file that's like 200 pages thick now of just like pictures and stories and text from all these books. I'm going nuts with it. So that's great. And then the other book I'm working on is actually a memoir that's co-written with my wife that's about her younger days growing up in the South because her parents were high up in the American Revolutionary Communist Party. So she had this upbringing where her parents would disappear and go, you know, lead labor marches and come back with broken arms. And the local police would call the Ku Klux Klan over to her house to intimidate them and stuff. So that's the other thing.
I've got a similar thing in my life, or actually my girlfriend's mother, or girlfriend's, her family, like, you know, mother and stepfather were very active in the communist, or I think the stepfather, not the mother, but the stepfather was active in the communist party, and they actually went on a vacation to Russia.
Really?
When she was a young girl, and she's been to Cuba a couple of times. She didn't get to go to Russia, but she's been to Cuba a couple of times, the girlfriend.
That's good. Yeah, my wife's parents were actually Maoist communists. They weren't into Russian communism. They were into, like, pure, full-on, little red book Maoism.
Oh, that's just weird.
Yeah, it was an incredibly intense ideology. And then they eventually, they leave the party when she is growing up because they realize that kind of an incredibly corrupt institution that's not serving anybody. Well, and then when she's in her teens, she joined the Revolutionary Communist Youth Brigade as a way to spite them, sort of. So it's an exciting story, and it's very sad and very strange. And I'm excited about that one, too. So yeah, two good books.
Have you ever collaborated with your wife on any projects?
No, this is new for us, and it's very stressful. Actually, we're collaborating on a project right now. We're collaborating on a baby.
Aww.
Which will be born in September.
Aww.
So, well, I think the baby is probably going to come out before the book, unless we rush it or the baby gets lazy. So,
well, my friend's baby was just 2 weeks late, so you never know.
It could happen.
I was warning her that
it's going to be enough to finish this book, though.
No. Well, mazel tov. Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm very excited.
You're becoming a regular adult now. No more bus trips for you.
You don't know that.
You don't know that.
You have to do tough stuff to feed your family sometimes.
And there we go. You'll be become a trucker any day now.
Right. Well, truckers get the good feed.
They do. They get pockets and pockets full of it. Now, what's your training, your art training? Is it pretty much self-taught or...
I am entirely self-taught. I'm a high school dropout, so college wasn't really in the cards for me. I basically just turned out thousands and thousands of embarrassing pages of comics until I figured out how to do it right.
Now, when did you start doing comics? Just pretty much.
I started publishing my own mini-comics when I was 15. I had them in stores around Seattle at about that time, and then I started doing work for The Stranger in Seattle at 16.
Oh, nice.
And it just kind of grew out from there. And then I had a page in the Comics Journal at 18, I think. Did some stuff for Slave Labor at 19. And just generally kind of worked outwards from there. Slow and steady build. And yeah, strangely enough, I'm now 30 and my first book is coming out. So I obviously took a wrong turn in there somewhere. But I think it was about 21 when I started drinking. So that would probably... indicate what slowed me down a little bit.
Well, you know, and it's something that I find doesn't happen too often with comic people, drinking.
Yeah,
actually, that's not true.
We have a lot of sorrows to drown.
We do. Well, not me, but comic creators in general, because I can't draw worth crap, and I never will. Now, your website is shortandhappy.com.
Yep.
Now, you sent me a couple of things to check out, because I don't really have much of your stuff. I had, like, some anthology stuff. One was a DVD, disc 4 of, I forget what it was called.
Evil Video?
Evil Video.
Yes.
Tell us about your Evil Video series.
Evil Video is a side project that I've been doing since 99. I do a new one every 2 years or so. It's basically like a video mixtape of hilarious, weird, scary, demented stuff, including stuff like... death metal band playing at a home for the developmentally disabled in Florida, clips from television shows that never made it on the air, bizarre, weird found footage from various sources. I usually compile each 2-hour volume has between like 350 and 400 individual clips on it. So it's a very painstaking, crazy process. And it's basically guaranteed to either make any party you put it on at or completely destroy any party you put it on at, depending on your guest list.
Well, we have something like that. I don't know if you have a chance to see Robin Bougie's Retardotron.
I haven't
DVD.
Yet, but I'm going to get a copy as soon as I finish paying for a baby.
Oh, dude, you're going to love it. It's an hour and 40 minutes of wrongness.
I'm sure I will.
Feces and more galore.
Yeah, I think he may... work a little bluer than I do.
He's an odd boy. God bless him. Now, he also sent me a couple of other things. One was a kind of a fantasy comic. And I couldn't find them before doing the show today.
That's okay. That's KSOFM you're referring to.
Yes.
Which stands for King. There's cusses in it, so I'm going to say King S of FM.
Here, let me just, listener discretion be advised. We're in Canada. Just go crazy.
Really?
Yeah, we don't have SEC. I just got to make sure it's appropriate to the content. And we're talking about...
We're talking about a book which has a title which means King Shit of Fuck Mountain. So
okay.
That's appropriate. And yes, it's about the titular king and a lone warrior's sacred quest to defeat him that doesn't really turn out as well as you would like it to.
Excellent. Now, can people purchase this from your website?
Shortandhappy.com.
Shortandhappy.com. And the other thing you sent me was a mini comic. There was a fat mini comic anthology, I guess, of a whole bunch of different New Yorkers to do it with this one kind of crazy guy, this crazy writer guy.
Yes, Lord Rexington Fear. One of my other hobbies is I run a website called Portal of Evil. It's basically like Yahoo for the weird. And every day we put up a bunch of links to like demented, disturbed personalities and websites. And there's this guy, and every once in a while I also do projects based on these. Like I'll do communal or group projects around something like that. Like right now we're working on a movie about one of the exhibits there. And one of the projects was this comic that you're holding called Fear, which is an adaptation of the online diaries of a man who goes by the name of Lord Rexington Fear, who is a legend in like New York comics fan circles.
Okay.
Because he is the most amazing, terrifying, sweaty, creepy, grasping, perverted lump of lard that you will ever meet in your life. He's astounding. And in this comic, like, every word that you read is verbatim he wrote it. So when he's talking about wanting to give a half-hour Hummer and paint his body Day-Glow blue or whatever, it's all fresh from his mouth.
Nice.
So in order to kind of bring him to more people, I had 18 cartoonists, I believe, adapt his work into comics form, and I think it's a pretty flabbergastingly awesome comic, actually.
Now, you put together the anthology as, I guess, editor?
Yes, using my stage name of Filipino Alias.
Filipino Alias?
Yes.
Nice. We're nearing the end of our time. It's now... Is there anything you want to say to kind of finish off the day?
Is there anything I want to say to finish off your day in Canada? I'd like to say thanks for having me on your show. I hope if you're interested in my book, you go over to your local comic book store and flip through it on the rack and make a disgusted face and then buy it. It has lots of terrible jokes in it, as well as maybe learning something about yourself.
I got to say, I love the chest vagina.
That is an excellent chest vagina. It's gigantic. It's made out of paper mache.
Any pictures?
I'll send you photographs of the real one for your viewing pleasure. It was quite the structure.
We got a second. I want to ask, putting that together, like paper mache, you did it all by thought, by memory? Is that what they said
in
the comic?
Well, I used the internet for structural reference. And actually, we couldn't do all that we wanted to do it. I wanted to rig up a tubing system in it so that it could squirt either urine or blood. But I didn't have the time to do a mechanical engineering task like that. Yeah, it was a huge process. Lots of paper mache, and then we coated it with rubber cement so it would be glistening
on
the inside.
And this is something you had prearranged with the person?
We had talked about it previously. I wanted to make it for him for his Halloween costume, but... I don't think he actually believed that I would do it until I showed up and did it.
Okay, I got another question to ask, more about the book. How many of these people, now, you met most of them online. How many of these people, all of them, majority? I mean, you had the date where you gave her, quote-unquote, an STD, but you didn't actually give her an STD.
Right, I did not give anybody genital warts.
There we go. You heard that here. He's clean, girls.
I did murder a girl. I did not give anybody genital warts.
Okay. What was it like meeting so many people for the first time?
It was a little strange. I mean, it was definitely like kind of flabbergasting that people would extend their hospitality and their homes to somebody who in the real world was essentially a complete stranger to them. But in a way, it was kind of a trust exercise. It's like, okay, you trust me enough to let me into your home. I trust you enough to not kill me in my sleep. We will trust each other. So it was sometimes awkward, sometimes easy as pie, you know, it just depended on the context.
How often do you have situations where you're like, I really wish I never met this person in person?
It happens occasionally. There's definitely like escape scenarios where you're like, okay, I'm gonna wrap this a little short this time around.
The situation where you had to stay in a hotel, that one seemed pretty awkward.
Yeah, that was just, well, you know, also because the girl's family was looking for me to murder me was another sort of cue that I needed to get out of El Paso fast. Yeah, I mean, there was definitely some awkwardness to it, and it's not something I would do right now because my wife would kill me completely and utterly dead.
So I'll make sure not to show up in New York and bang on your door. And
oh, no, we put people up all the time. Like, we are... sofa bed smells like a terrible dog, but if anybody wants to sleep on it, they usually can. This is not an invitation to Canadian listeners.
I do get a lot of international listeners. I even have people in Australia that listen to the Ink Stud Show.
Okay, this might be an invitation to Australian listeners.
Okay, there we go. Aussies, you heard it here. Kay Thorpe will be your friend. Thank you very much for taking the time with us today. Once again, I apologize for the 15 minutes of frustration at the beginning, and thank you, listeners, for sticking around. K. Thor Jensen, new book, Red Eye, Black Eye. Thank you for joining us this week.
Thanks a lot, Robin.
Okay, bye. K. Thor Jensen, check out his new book, Red Eye, Black Eye. You can pick it up at good comic stores. Lucky's will probably have it, RX Comics, Comic Shop. You know, I'm going to leave it there. The other comic stores, prove it to me that you can carry it. Next week, my guest will be another New York cartoonist, Matt Locks, who has a new book from Oni Books that came out in October called Side Scrollers, which is all about video games. If you don't know what a side scroller is, you really didn't pay attention to your Nintendo. Week after that, I don't know yet, but the week after that will be Jeff Smith, author of Bone. And a new book coming up from DC, Shazam, the Monster Society, or something like that. I can't remember. My head's just not all there today, people. And the other thing, 22nd of February, I'll be joined by Shannon O'Leary, who is coming up to town to do a thing for her book, Pet Noir, I think it's called, at Sophia Books. So she'll be here in the afternoon, and then that night she'll be at Sophia Books, so you can meet her and get her to sign your, or buy her book and get her to sign it. And if you don't, well, you're not a friend of the Ink Studs. Up next is the Crimes and Treasons radio hour and a half of madness. I'm going to end off the show with Cub, because I played all of the Kay Thor's requested music, and I mentioned Cub earlier, and I love Cub, so here we go. Thanks, Kay Thor, for joining us, and search him on YouTube so you can see my blind date. Ink Stud CITR 101.9 FM.